Are you worried about the global consequences of gassing up your convertible? Gas prices are obviously rising. Do you believe that there are greater costs than the mere financial ones that are escalating when you fuel up your slug bug and peel out down the strip? Do you like the smell of French fries?
I love it, man. It's the great.
Biodiesel fuel is a safe, non-toxic, and biodegradable alternative to gasoline, which is becoming increasingly available, especially along the West Coast. Derived from plants, biodiesel has a complete carbon cycle and results in vastly lower toxic emissions. Using biodiesel requires no modifications to standard diesel engines and actually provides better fuel efficiency than gasoline. And they're quite sporty. The excellent torque of diesel engines provides superior performance, and the agricultural business will also benefit from making the conversion, as biodiesel can be made from locally grown plants or just created from waste cooking oil. Contact www.gobiodiesel.com for more details.
Hello, I'm personally inviting you to come stimulate your curiosity with Body Worlds 3.
Body Worlds 3.
If you'd like to gain insight into the structure and function of healthy and unhealthy bodies, come see the exhibit that has satisfied over 20 million
Body
people.
Worlds
recommended 3. For ages 10 and older, and personal photography is not allowed.
Oh,
Body Worlds 3. Go to OMSI.org for more information.
Body Worlds 3.
Liquid Beat. Every single Tuesday night, 7 to 8 o'clock, the best that hip-hop has to offer. Music, politics, culture. Tuesday nights, 7 to 8 o'clock, KPSU.
You're listening to KBPS Portland, also known as KPSU, Portland's College Radio, evenings and weekends at 1450 AM citywide, 24 hours a day at www.kpsu.org, and 98.3 FM on campus. You're listening to Maha Mantra. This is your host, Jairad Hesham. Today, I have a special guest with me, His Holiness Praladananda Swami. His Holiness Praladananda Swami is originally from New York, and he's a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, where he serves as the Minister for Health. He has been practicing Bhakti Yoga for 38 years, and I've invited him here to speak specifically about mantra meditation. So, without any further ado, I'd like to get started with our interview. And in addition, we're also going to be playing a little bit of music as well. So, my first question is, how is mantra meditation different from other types of meditation?
Meditation means to contemplate or to think over a subject matter deeply. In the system of yoga called Ashtanga Yoga, there are 8 different steps of meditation. One step, the first step is called yama niyama. That is following certain individual processes a purification and certain social observances in order to control the mind and senses. And then one sits in an asana in order to further control the mind and senses. Then there's a process called pranayama and pratyahara, that is controlling the breathing process and withdrawing the senses from all different types of distraction. Then one begins the process of actually being able to further control the mind through the process of dharana and dhyana, namely contemplation and meditation. And then, as one perfects both contemplation and meditation, one can enter into samadhi where the mind becomes balanced. One is able to see everything more equally, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor. Mantra meditation is also, according to the dictionary, a form of meditation, and is using sound vibration in order to fix the mind upon a higher state of consciousness. We understand that the highest state of consciousness is our natural state of consciousness. Now we're covered over by artificial consciousness, and therefore we're being distracted from our natural consciousness. Through the process of mantra meditation, we can come back to our natural state of consciousness very easily, and therefore revive our original state of consciousness. The mantra that we chant is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So instead of trying to withdraw our awareness from what's around us, we're instead doing something positive. We're putting our awareness on something positive, namely the spiritual sound vibration of Hare Krishna. Hare means the energy of God, and Krishna means the name of God in Sanskrit. Krishna also means the most attractive person, that God is not an ordinary personality. It is not that anyone on the street can claim themselves to be God and actually be God. But the definition of God, according to the Vedic literature, the oldest scriptures in the world, is that God is Aishvaryasya Samayasya. That is, God is the original source of all beauty and all fame and all knowledge, all wealth, all strength, and all renunciation. By focusing our attention on the sound vibration of Hare Krishna, then gradually we remember Krishna. We can remember his name, his form, his qualities, his associates, and his pastimes. And according to the Vedic literature, God being absolute, we actually get the direct association of God just by chanting his name. And the more we remember him, the more intense, the more complete, the more profound, the more consistent our thoughts are about Krishna, the more we directly associate with him, the more we can experience the difference between ordinary material experience and transcendental experience. Ordinary material experience means that we're looking for a state of awareness, somehow or another, where we can be as happy as possible for as long as possible. But in the state of becoming aware of Krishna, we actually become as happy as possible for as long as possible.
Okay, my next question is a little bit more of a personal question. I'm curious about how and why you started this type of mantra meditation. What about it interested you, and what's kept you going for 38 plus years in this type of practice?
I was a student at the University of Buffalo when I started, and I understood that the purpose of life is to become as happy as possible for as long as possible. But in order to do that, one has to learn what is the process. Unfortunately, at the university that I went to, they didn't teach any process of becoming as happy as possible for as long as possible, so that part of knowledge was missing. But one day I had some transcendental experience. I knew that the process of growing awareness was not to simply to study some books or to get a degree in college, but it meant to practice some form of transcendence, some form of higher consciousness. Therefore, I started to practice Hatha Yoga. I became a vegetarian. I took up the process of studying astrology. But one of my friends who had dropped out of college told me about a place where they were practicing Bhakti Yoga, a small railroad shack near the university. I went down to visit it and found that they were chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. And although I couldn't believe that simply by chanting some sound vibration, one could get as much effect as by doing a Hatha Yoga posture, but still I took it up, tried it out, and it worked. It actually made my consciousness more aware. It actually freed me from anxiety and brought me to a stage of becoming more conscious of Krishna. And the more I became aware of Krishna, the more I felt transcendental happiness.
Okay, there's a lot of different mantras that people are chanting. It's kind of a popular thing, especially in the yoga crowd, to chant in different kirtans and different bhajans. What makes the Maha Mantra unique?
Nam Namakari Bahuda Nijasarva Shaktis. According to a great authority, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the name of God and God Himself are non-different. Just like when we can chant water, 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 we cannot taste the water simply by chanting the name water. But if we chant the name of Krishna or any bona fide name of God, such as Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, then by chanting the name of God, we remember God and we're actually directly associating with Him. Therefore, it is not an ordinary sound vibration, but it is a transcendental sound vibration. Of course, one can chant the name of Om Shivaya Namaha or other types of mantras, and these are the names of God's servants. But even the servants, what they're doing, they're teaching their followers to meditate upon Krishna. Lord Shiva is a great devotee of Lord Krishna, and he's always meditating upon Krishna by chanting the Maha Mantra. Therefore, if we really want to please Lord Shiva, we should not chant his name, but we should chant his master's name, Lord Krishna.
Okay, great. Now I'm going to play a little bit more of the Maha Mantra so people can experience that, and then we'll get back to the rest of the interview. Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare.
विचार नहीं कनकना धर्म समस्तापक लोकानां हितकारिणां भुवने मन धर्म संस्थापक लोकानां हितकारिणां त्रिभुवने मन्न शरण चैतन्य कृपा पर लोकानां हितकारिणां त्रिभुवने मन्न शरणं धर्म संस्थापक लोकानां हितकारिणां त्रिभुवने मन्न शरणं राधा कृष्ण राधा कृष्ण पदारविंदौ भजनामृतौ राधा कृष्ण पदारविंदौ भजना नंदे नमत्तालिका वंदे रूप सनातन रघुजुगौ
You're listening to Maha Mantra on KPSU. This is your host, Jai Radhe Shyam. Today I have His Holiness Prahladananda Swami with me. He's the Minister for Health for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and we're talking about mantra meditation. So the next question I had was, I was wondering, we're talking specifically about the Maha Mantra, which is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And what I'm wondering about this mantra specifically is, how does it work?
Every sound vibration helps us remember something. Just like if we chant Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, then automatically we'll remember not only the name of Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck, but we'll remember that they have ears, big ears, specifically Mickey Mouse, and that they waddle like a duck, Donald Duck. We'll remember their name, their form, and probably their associates like Minnie Mouse or Goofy or other such personalities. So naturally, anytime we hear a sound, It reminds us of something. But the Hare Krishna mantra helps us remember Krishna. But Krishna is not an ordinary person, and the sound is not ordinary, because Krishna and Krishna's name are the same. When we chant Krishna's name, we actually personally get Krishna's association. And the more we learn how to chant in such a way as to call to Krishna so that Krishna reveals himself, then the more we intimately and consistently get his association. Krishna is always there. Actually, Krishna is everywhere. Just like the sun is in the sky, but sometimes the sun is covered by clouds. But when the clouds go away, then in the light of the sun, we can see the sun, we can see ourselves, and we can see everyone else and everything else in the light of the sun. Similarly, Krishna is present because he's the source of everything. He's also within every atom, and he's also within our heart. But due to the influence of illusion, we're now misidentifying ourselves with this gross and subtle material bodies, and we're thinking that Krishna is not existent, or that Krishna is somewhere else. But by the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, our original consciousness is revealed, because the Maha Mantra, being non-different from Krishna, reveals not only our own identity, but we can see everyone and everything else in the light of the Krishna consciousness that we obtain by chanting Hare Krishna, and therefore we can see things as they actually are.
Okay, how is this process of chanting this mantra meditation, how is it related to yoga? Is it a type of yoga?
The purpose of yoga is to come to the platform of self-realization. And this self-realization is achieved most easily by directly associating with Krishna. It is like taking the elevator instead of the staircase. By the process of yoga, generally one is learning how to control the mind and senses, how to do with this body that we have in our words and our mind, how to perform activities which are in harmony with the laws of material nature, then come to the platform of knowledge or awareness of how things are related to the absolute truth or what the laws of material nature are, and then to come to the platform of realizing what the absolute truth is. But by this process of chanting Hare Krishna, we directly not only go through the process of understanding what the absolute truth is and then taking up the service of the absolute truth, but we directly take up the service of the absolute truth, and therefore the other stages of self-realization, namely controlling the mind and senses, doing our work according in harmony with the laws of material nature, realizing what those laws are, and then acting perfectly in terms of those laws, is automatically achieved just by chanting Hare Krishna.
Okay, and you might have touched on this already, but what is the name of, why do you use Krishna as the name of God, and why is that significant?
Krishna means the highest pleasure. It comes from the more all-attractive personality. It comes from the Sanskrit kri, which means to draw, and sha, which means to draw everyone's attention or everyone's attraction. So Krishna attracts everyone because whatever we see has come from him, and therefore here in the material world, whatever we find attractive, whether it's beauty or strength or fame or knowledge or renunciation, that all comes from Krishna. When we become aware of Krishna, then the original source of all attraction attracts us also.
Okay, I wanted to remind people that are listening that they can call into the station if they have questions of their own. And that phone number is 503-725-5945. So if you have a question for His Holiness Prahladananda Swami, who's visiting today on the Maha Mantra Show, you can call that number and we'll be happy to answer your question. So the next question that I have is, what are the benefits of this chanting of Hare Krishna that you have experienced personally in your own life?
According to the Sanskrit verse, one Sanskrit verse, it says that just like when you eat a meal, simultaneously you experience three different reactions to eating a good meal. One is that you feel the alleviation of hunger, you feel the strength that the food supplies, and you feel a growing sense of satisfaction. Similarly, by the scientific process of Krishna consciousness, one will gradually become aware of the Absolute Truth. One will develop love for the Absolute Truth. One's relation with the Absolute Truth will be developed. At the same time, one will become detached from those things which draw the mind away from reality.
Okay, great. Now I'm going to go ahead and play some more music, and then we'll get back to our conversation.
Radhe Jaya Jaya Mata Vadai De Gokul Tharuni Mandala Mahi De Radhe Jaya Jaya Mata Vadai De Gokul Tharuni Mandala Mahi De Radhe Jaya Jaya Mata Vadai De Gokul Tharuni Mandala Mahi De Nishkutavin Dhabi Pinesh Damodar Radhi Vardhan Vesh Hari Nishkutavin Dhabi Pinesh
Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhava Daite Gokula Haruni Mandala Mahite
Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhava Sakhi Guna Ravita Vishake Prishabhanu Dadi Navashashi Leke Lalita Sakhi Guna Ravita Vishake
Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhav Daite Gokula Haruni Mandala Mahite
Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhav Daite Yeah.
You're listening to Maha Mantra on KPSU, and I have His Holiness Prahladananda Swami here, and we're having a conversation about meditation. His Holiness has practiced meditation for the past 38 years. And so my next question relates to controlling the mind while practicing meditation. It seems like in this day and age, it's really hard for people to just sit down and be focused on any type of meditation. So I'm wondering how it is that you recommend that people try to control their mind.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, it is very difficult to control the mind. Arjuna, his friend, was asking him, and he said, trying to control the mind is just like trying to control the wind. But Krishna said, yes, it is difficult, but still is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. Suitable practice means that we have to know what is the higher taste that we're looking for, what is the actual goal. And detachment means we have to know what is not the goal, what is actually detrimental to our peace of mind. Krishna also mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that now, although we're spiritual souls, that's also meditation in itself. Krishna says that our body is changing. So all of us can meditate how our bodies have changed. But we ourselves within the body, we're always the same person. Therefore, the person who's aware of the body is spiritual, and the subtle mind and the intelligence and the body, the gross body, they're external material energies. So the soul, he's now aware of the gross and subtle body, just like the sun is in one place, but it's illuminating the entire universe with its sunlight. Similarly, the soul, the person, ourselves within the body, we're in one place in the body, in the heart region, and we're illuminating the entire body by our consciousness. So now we're conscious of the agitated mind. So we want the mind to be less agitated. We have to know who to associate with. Generally, we associate according to what we're hearing. When we hear the glories of something, whether it be rock music, how great a movie is, or how great a concert is, or how great a personality is, then we want to associate with that person, or that particular music, or that particular art, or that particular sport. We become attracted to that association. And when the mind becomes filled with such thoughts, then the senses become agitated, and they want to perform certain activities. And in order to do that, if it's mundane, for instance, say someone is walking down the street and they see a beautiful girl. And they think, the senses of the mind, they say, go get her immediately. But the intelligence says that's not very good because that's against the laws of religion or dharma or the laws of nature, that one should not do such things. But if the mind and senses say, don't listen to that, that's old-fashioned, no one believes that anymore, that went out many years ago. Now the new thing is, if it feels good, then you do it. Whatever your mind and senses you do, you obey them. The soul, if it's not very intelligent, will think, all right, I'll surrender to my mind and senses rather than this antiquated idea of what to do. And therefore the soul will tell the intelligence, instead of coming up with some dogma about how to follow the laws of nature, simply use your intelligence in order to figure out how to serve the mind and senses. Therefore, the intelligence will think of a plan how to gratify the mind and the senses. So the intelligence will say, write her a letter, tell her you're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in the last 2 weeks or so. And tell her that if you meet her in such and such a place, you'll give her the sun and the moon, and if she's nice to you, you'll probably throw in a few stars also. But don't sign the letter, because I can see her husband standing right by her side, and he's twice as big as you are. So in this way, the soul, ourselves, who are supposed to be utilizing the intelligence, how to utilize the mind and senses in such a way as to come to a higher state of consciousness, namely to realize that we are a soul, that we are different from the body, that there is higher awareness, instead becomes a victim to thinking that by utilizing the intelligence to serve the mind and senses, ourselves, the soul, become happy. But this is just like a fish out of water. If a fish is in water, it feels very satisfied. But if the fish is out of water, it doesn't matter how much material amenities you give the fish. You can give the fish a nice car, you can give him a nice fish girlfriend, you can give him a nice fish house, but unless he's in the water, he can't feel satisfied. Similarly, the soul, unless it comes back to its higher or original state of consciousness, can't be satisfied by any amount of material association. Therefore, the secret of ultimately controlling the mind is to actually find something that satisfies the mind. And the secret of not satisfying the mind is to make a goal which is only temporary, which agitates the mind, and ultimately leaves the mind dissatisfied.
I'm curious about the body and the soul. How is it that we can practically understand that we are a soul as opposed to a body?
Well, as I said, we can point to our arm or our leg as our arm or our leg, but whose arm or leg is it? We're not the arm, we're not the leg, we're not the head, we're none of the different bodily parts. We're the person who's perceiving these arms and legs and heads and whatever else. Therefore, we're the observer, and what we're observing is different from ourselves. When we become more clear in reality, when our mind is less disturbed and agitated, when we're not so much absorbed in hankering or fearful about the future and lamenting about the past, when our mind becomes more clear and stable, then we can see ourselves more clearly. And then we'll realize that I'm the ever unchanging personality within this body, who's aware of the body, but just by being aware of the body doesn't mean I become the body. Just like one may watch a movie and become so much absorbed in the hero's activities that one may actually imagine oneself to be the hero. And when the hero is victorious, one may feel victorious. Or if the hero dies, one may actually feel that one has gone through some catastrophic life change. But actually, the hero's activities have nothing to do with ourselves, simply we're the observer of the movie. Similarly, by watching the body, by observing the body, by identifying with the body, we may imagine that we're changing along with the body, but we're not changing. Simply the body's changing. The person who's aware of the body is always the same.
Okay. I just wanted to remind people that are listening that if they're interested in asking a question to His Holiness Prahladananda Swami, they can call in, and the phone number of the radio station is 503-725-5945. My next question is, what advice you would have for someone who's interested in starting meditation but has never practiced any kind of meditation before?
Well, our spiritual master is Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada has written many books. Just by reading the books, it's meditation. One of the most famous books is called The Bhagavad Gita As It Is. And if you call in or you somehow or another contact Jai Radhe Shyam, she'll be able to give you the information by which you can get the Bhagavad Gita. And if you read the Bhagavad Gita, not only you'll be meditating when you're reading the Bhagavad Gita, but it'll tell you how to meditate in every point in your life, everything you're doing, whether you're at school or at work, whether you're playing sports, anywhere and any time, you'll be able to meditate.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit more about the Bhagavad Gita and where that came from?
Bhagavan means, Bhag means opulence, and Van means possessor. So the person who possesses all opulence, as I said before, namely all beauty, all strength, all knowledge, all fame, all renunciation, that such a personality is called Bhagavan, one who possesses all opulence. And Gita means song. So this is a song or a conversation between two warriors on a battlefield 5,000 years ago. And in that conversation, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna what to do on this battlefield. Very stressful situation, not the ideal situation to be tried to meditate on or in. But during this, before the battle, Krishna explains to Arjuna, your main problem is you forgot who you really are, and you forgot what the ultimate goal of life is. Therefore, by Bhagavad Gita, it explains how we can come to the platform of realizing our own self while we're engaging our daily activities.
In the sub-basement. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, sorry about that. We got a telephone call. So, are there any things that someone could do right away that you feel like would be to help them support starting a meditation practice? Perhaps some lifestyle changes, or what kinds of activities might help them come to the qualification of being able to practice with a more steady mind?
According to the Vedic literature, the most elementary part of advancing in consciousness is to regulate one's life. Generally, especially in this particular age, which is called Kali Yuga, people are suffering most from irregularity. They get up at different times, they go to sleep at different times, they eat different amounts, their schedule is very erratic and unpredictable. Everything's unpredictable. But if one makes one's activities more predictable, more regulated, then automatically the mind will become more peaceful.
Okay, great. So, did you have anything else to share with us today?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And while you're chanting Hare Krishna, try to be happy.
I think that comes automatically for people that take up that practice. So, I'd like to thank His Holiness Prahladananda Swami for coming to the Maha Mantra Show at KPSU. If you'd like, you can also download this show online at www.kpsu.org. And this show, you can find it each Friday morning at 7 a.m. and Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
So now I'm going to play one last song before the end of the program.
Oh, Tadbara Shashana.